Board of Supervisors meeting will come back to order for our 1:30 public hearing. Item 11, Community Development Block Grant. Discussion and possible action relative to a public hearing to consider new CDBG projects for the 2014 cycle and approval of the annual reports and authorization of the county administrator's signature and submission of the reports to the State Department of Housing and Community Development. Good morning, Terry. Good afternoon.
Hi, Terry Cox, Cox Consulting. I want to preface my comments by saying that I have my usual sign-in sheet for everybody that's attending the public hearing, and written comments regarding the county's community development block grant program can be addressed to the administrative office. So we have three different items today. Let's start with the annual reports. The State Department of Housing and Community Development, which is the funding agency for the Community Development Block Grant Program, requires that all grantees have an annual public hearing where the public can make comments about the county's Community Development Block Grant Program. You do have one open grant at the moment, which is 12 CDBG A371, and in that you have the Housing Stabilization Program, which serves 63 people, actually started the 24th of January. They provided homeless services for 48 people, and 34 people have received assistance. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about the annual report.
Questions, gentlemen?
Nope.
We also have a report for your program income reuse fund. You haven't got any money at the moment, and so there was no activity for that one.
I do have one question. It's I thought in America we're not practicing discrimination. I see more race and code numbers than I've ever seen in my life. There's race. There's codes for this, for race, and there's codes for that. And I guess we don't practice what we preach. Is that what it is? Nothing personal against you. I'm just making an observation of the
this is
forms.
The federal requirements. Yeah. Did you want to take comments from the public about the annual reports?
Well, we will, but. In the grant that that ATCA had for the housing, what was it? Since that was just initiated in January, what's the timeline on that? Is it only about a six-month grant?
No, it's what's the timeline for what's happened so far, or what's the timeline on the total grant?
For the total grant.
It's like 2.5 years.
So at each timeline in July, you have to get
every July we do this. Yes.
Cycle, you have to have a comment period then. Okay.
So we don't have to meet the requirement of having spent down, what was the criteria, the new criteria, over 50% of the funds?
It's 50% at the time that you apply next, which would be the middle of April next year.
So by April next year, we will have to have expended over 50% of a 2.5-year grant cycle.
Correct.
Any other questions, board members?
You know, no. Good here.
Okay. At this time, we'll take public comment then. Public comment.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry, I was signing the wrong thing. My name is Beetle Barber, and I work for the Amador Tuolumne Community Action Agency as the Housing Resources Director. We've been looking forward to this chance to thank you for allowing us the funds to continue housing stabilization programs and homeless services this year and next year. As Ms. Cox said, after only 5 months, this community development block grant has made a huge difference in the lives of 111 low-income and very low-income residents in Amador County. In providing temporary shelter for a family or moving them from homelessness into secure housing, in saving a homeowner from foreclosure, or teaching a class in simple budgeting tricks on how to save hundreds of dollars on utility bills. Those are some of the things that we've been doing. We are on track to meet our promise to you to serve at least 700 county residents before the contract ends. We base those projections on recent community assessments that show in Amador County 159 homeless persons that we contacted in the annual countywide survey done in late January of 2013. 15 of those homeless were homeless veterans, with having had active duty. Also, recent information that Amador County is among 5 counties with the highest number of foreclosures right now. That's according to Realty Track. The most foreclosures are occurring in River Pines, Pioneer, Fiddletown, Ione, and Volcano in the county. And also knowing that 2,400 households in Amador County are currently utilizing food stamps in 2013. We are so honored that you selected us to do this work. With your permission, we would like to share a few encounters we've had with persons in need. How critical your support is.
You know, one thing I will say, Ms. Barbara's kind of a little bit off subject, but it does pertain as far as having the very high foreclosure rate, is we have some national forests that are very productive, and it seems like systematically those national forests have been closed off by our federal government, which then places people in poverty, which at that point there, then the federal government has programs to help those people. With taxpayer dollars, it's really not a very good situation.
Based on fails.
Yeah.
Familiar story.
So. One other thing, too, Beetle. I'd just like to say that, you know, today's paper in 3 different cities, it stated front page that housing markets are up 30%. The highest they've ever seen, and you know, people read that and they think, well, yeah, but it doesn't pertain to every county. It just pertains to certain areas, and you have to read that fine print to find out where that certain area is.
It almost seems like we'll be last to recover up here.
Good afternoon. My name is Yolanda Miranda. I'm a housing counselor for Amador Tuolumne Community Action Agency. And I just wanted to kind of go over a little bit as far as the families that I'm serving right now, Amador County. It's not all of them, but they're just some of the ones that I'm focusing right now because they're in dire need right now. I have 9 cases right now that I have 70, they're over 70 years of age, living on a fixed income in foreclosure status right now. I have 6 cases with young adults, small children, and they're living on low income because maybe they just have lost their jobs, reduced hours of some sort. I have 12 families that are middle-aged, husband and wife. They're out of work. They're looking for work. And I got 5 families that been here, and they're in foreclosure, and they're living in homes that been in the generation, 3 or 4 generations already, losing their homes. So vital right now that we're being able to help these families to recover. I just like to and right now, another thing, I have 10 modifications that completed since January till the month of June that were saved, their homes were saved. And there were outstanding modifications that not just allowed them to afford the home, but made it sustainable for the future. So I have, I'd like you introduce to one of my success foreclosure family here, that he's here to kind of share a little bit of information on his situation. I know he's got more challenges to go through, but it was truly a success story on his behalf.
And before you bring somebody else up, though, could you explain to us how those modifications work, what ATCA does, and just how that procedure plays out.
And what the limits are on the amounts that can be expended on each modification.
Okay. The way it is that a lot of it's through word of mouth. Sometimes through the website, we're able to get families that call in. They come in with an intake. I take the information. I start working with them. I have folks in here that never even open up a budget. They're not even aware how a budget works. So pretty much I'm third party. I'm a negotiator to the servicers and the lenders to help them get on their feet as far as looking at their budget, their monthly expenses, see what we can do before we make that call, just educating them on the process, how things work on their end as far as the options, what is available, what do the servicers have for them to qualify, and then just preparing everything in a package and submitting it to the servicer. So it's a process that can take anywhere from 5-6 months to 2 years. I have folks here with me with 2 years. So it's a big ordeal. So during the time when I'm working with them, assisting them, I'm also working with them getting their credit fixed and just finding ways of being able to share with them with community resources that we have available to share with them. So pretty much that's it.
So, but to clarify, you look at their personal financial situation.
Yes, I do.
You try to help them to develop a budget and come to a conclusion of what their budget will allow them to make in
right.
the way of mortgage payments.
Right.
With and so many then you negotiate with the mortgage servicer to readjust the loan. Maybe they lower the monthly payments but add a balloon payment on the end of the mortgage, or no, okay. None of that?
Yeah, pretty much a lot of them right now, because of their status and their income right now, they cannot afford any kind of a forbearance, so we have to look at reducing the mortgage, and that pretty much we're not just talking about interest rates or terms of the loan, we're talking about reducing principal. And that's one thing that the programs through the Obama administration, through the Making Home Affordable, has allowed the folks the lenders to work with the homeowners in the situation where they've done everything they could between lowering the interest rate, changing the terms of the loan, they do the reduction of principal. It has to be in a budget where it's an investment for it, not just the homeowner, but for the investor too. So they have to look at the whole scenario, is to look and work with the client's budget. It starts with the budget first. And knowing what the servicers have, what programs are available, I go in there trying to negotiate and say, this is where they're at, this is where they could be at if we could get that program available for them. So there is a lot of good workouts right now.
That they have to have verified code violations, or it has to be health and safety related?
Pardon?
On the home to do the improvement on it?
Yeah, that's a different
program. On that program, on the housing?
That's a different.
No, it has nothing to do. Pretty much it's just looked at their financial. What I do a financial analysis on their budget and on the situation and what options are available through the servicer at that time to figure out what is in the best interest for both parties.
Your loan modification. Just on the housing stabilization program is what you're speaking on now?
Yes.
Okay. You don't know anything about the income reuse fund for the housing rehabilitation program?
No.
Okay. Somebody else will speak.
You know, I have a question on that loan modification program. When they're modifying loans, is that only on houses that are basically underwater, where there's no equity left in the house?
No, actually, it could go both ways, because sometimes they'll be in the home where they have a little bit of equity, and they could do a refinance, and we're able to work with them through that program, too. So they usually come in with imminent default, or foreclosure. Even after foreclosure, when they don't know where to do or where to turn, I'm able to help them out with the resources there, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Hello?
Here, as an individual, a layperson, to just bring to your attention the
state, yeah. State your name for the record, please.
Frank.
Pull the mic up a little bit, please. Thank you, sir.
I thought I was shorter than that. Frank Delp is my name. I moved to Amador County 10 years ago. And I'm just trying to point out that it wasn't until, and I spoke with a few of you gentlemen in the past.
Contractor.
Yes, sir. And, of course, through that, I was able to really be successful here in Amador County. But in the process, I just fell into a perfect storm in terms of my life. As an individual, I was diagnosed with a mastoid tumor in my right eye and in my optic nerve. From that, I had to go to the hospital, went through that journey, and in the process of that, I was unable to continue in my profession as I had put toward due diligence. In that process, I had to liquidate almost everything and held on to my home. Through that, of course, you know, we had the downturn in the economy and the TARP and everything else, and that's when I applied for all the services through the federal government as an individual. And unfortunately, through that, I wasn't able to ascertain the needs or what I was trying to accomplish in keeping my home, which I built myself and was valued at a good price there in Volcano. And it wasn't until I couldn't afford an attorney, it took me years to get disability and different things, but it wasn't until I met Yolanda Miranda and got to that agency. After five attempts of trying to modify my home, as I paid on time, yearly, monthly, with no no arrears or anything, and it wasn't until I met her and got to speak with her, fill out the forms in the context of which they required, under their agenda and their requirements because of my lack of knowledge or maybe due diligence. But once she was able to put me and my significant other under her umbrella and her tutelage and her experience and background, she not only worked with my mortgager, but afforded us a successful opportunity that we're now in the process of no longer, we've had our home put into perspective to now our taxes meet our value. We're current, of course, as we always have been with our payments, but we have no issue or problem, and our price, our monthly cost has been reduced, as I had asked and what I'd sought at the very beginning of my cancer problems and my life experience financially. And I'm grateful for the fact that there are people that are in our county, in Amador County, as you stated, that the demographics of where you live, or the, like you say, the fine print, that this agency and people like her have the wherewithal, the knowledge, and the ability to reach into a company that was all the way in Texas and afforded me and my significant other the opportunity to know that we have a future here with our home, in our community, and ourselves. And it's a real step up for me in my journey to recover from my cancer and get back into a viable position for my family and my county and my state. And it's not a matter that I just need everyone to understand and know that this agency is viable on many, many levels. And I'm grateful for who they are and what they represent to our community and to the people in this area. And it's a very personal matter. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank. Good to see you.
Good afternoon.
Hey. My name is Denise Cloward, and I'm the Housing Programs Manager for the Amador Tuolumne Community Action Agency. As Terry shared with you, all of the numbers and demographics and statistics of clients and families that we've served so far with the CDBG monies, I think we should keep in mind that this has been accomplished in a very short period of time. So needless to say, our housing programs in the main office is very busy at all times, and we just have myself and Betty Mann, who's not here today, that conducts the smart money and financial classes. So it's moving along very quickly. I'd also like to mention that there were 63 individuals received the housing stabilization services and 48 received the homeless services. Currently, we have served 88 households in our emergency shelter as well since January 1 until now, 65 adults, and 23 of them have been children, so that's 35% of the total inside the emergency shelter have been children. That's actually, unfortunately, the largest number of children that we've had in a six-month period inside the shelter ever. So we have a very large food budget as well. But we are working with these families and exiting them back out into housing as quickly as possible, finding them stable housing that they can afford. I would also like to say, as my team and I work on the front lines with the shelter folks, whether they're literally homeless or they're looking for a place to rent, something that's affordable, or they own their home and they currently need to stay in their home, this money that you've shared with our agency is very appreciated, and we work very hard to put these families back out into the community and back out into housing. Families are going through difficult times financially, and this funding and our housing stabilization services keep them working in our community. It keeps their children in our schools, and it gets them back to life as they know it, which I think is the reason that this money is here and the reason that we do the work that we do. I also, instead of just one particular story or client, really quickly, I just wanted to take a moment to thank publicly the Amador County Faith-Based Task Force. This group of congregations and volunteers and lead lay pastors and service providers meet monthly and exchange ideas and coordinate some of the most amazing results for these homeless families or families at risk of becoming homeless. Some of these wonderful organizations that share their time and skills to work with our agency include the United Methodist Church, the Ion Methodist Church, Mount Zion, Calvary Chapel, Grace Fellowship, St. Vincent de Paul, the Church of the Nazarene, the New Life Christian Center, TLC or Transitional Living Through Christ, the Community Church of Pine Grove, Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Seventh-day Adventists, Adult Protective Services of Amador, Sierra Wind Wellness and Recovery, Operation Care, the Cornerstone Apartments, and Sroptimist. That's just to name a few. It's been growing immensely since we started it. I want to say thank you to all of those volunteers inside those service agencies and congregations, because it takes all of them and their love and their support to wrap around services around these families so that they can stay in their housing situations. We can, as we know from past experiences, you can put someone in housing and, you know, help with a deposit, maybe do an initial intake and a follow-up appointment and some referrals. But the in-between time that's spent with these families and the visits and the human connection that those volunteers are making is really actually making the difference in keeping them in stable housing environments. I'm supposed to make it quick, so I guess I better hurry. So I just want to say thank you to them. Thank you to you. And very quickly, an example of some of the collaborative efforts that have happened. A single mom goes to the domestic violence shelter, comes through our shelter for a short period of time. She has an intake with ACCA. She receives a deposit to move into her new home with her son. She secures a job, and her new apartment is completely empty. 2 days later, a couple of the congregations stop by. She's got household supplies. She's got a couch. She's got a bed for her son. She's been invited to meals. She feels a part of the community. So that's what I'm talking about. That's the end result. That's kind of like taking all the money and all the services and putting it together and making it complete, making the package complete. Grace Fellowship stops by the homeless shelter, does a barbecue, talks with all the people inside the shelter, and gets to know those families and individuals and why they become homeless and make that human connection. A man needs a special kind of pair of boots to get back to work. A mom needs a ride. Wheelchairs for handicapped kids, you name it, we got it coming in. And so it's the best collaboration we've ever done with housing stabilization services ever. And other counties want to be like us. They want to do what we're doing, because we are making great strides in keeping these folks housed. We know this by the outcomes that we're seeing and that people are staying housed. And so that's it. So thank you very much.
Thank
you,
ma'am.
What we're supposed to be doing. Thank you.
Any other comments? Rich, we're just taking comments right now for the annual report. Start pretty quick after we approve the annual report. So any other comments on the annual report?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we authorize the county administrator's signature on submission of the reports to HCD and approve those reports.
Is there a second?
I'll second that, Mr. Chairman.
Moved and seconded to approve the annual report, authorize the county administrator's signature. Terry, a question for you. Was there no one here representing the other program, Income Reuse Fund for the Housing Rehabilitation Program?
That's the county. And like I said, there is no funding in that account currently, and so there was no activity for that program.
Do you anticipate funding in that account or not?
Well, The county has not had activities that generate program income for quite a while. Usually comes from the repayments on the housing rehabilitation loans, and I think those have all paid off. So unless you have a new activity that generates funding, then there won't be any money in that account.
I guess I don't understand why we even applied for that program then.
Well, in order to ever receive money, you have to have a standing account. So it's just a requirement of the program.
Placeholder, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah, it just seems like a good program, but if we're never going to have a chance to exercise it, then nice to be a stakeholder, but if you can't do anything.
I think we bought a water filter for Volcano Community Services District. Meant to be repaid back.
Now that appears to be a job for the supervisor from that area, then he uses discretionary fund. Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And now on to new programs.
Right. So this is the time where we discuss possible projects for the 2014 cycle of the Community Development Block Grant Program. The eligible activities under this program include housing, public works, community facilities, public services, what they call the Enterprise Fund, which is the Small Business Revolving Loan Fund. The over-the-counter program is large economic development projects, and then planning grants. Now, the way that the State Department of Housing and Community Development has put the money out changed 2 years ago. They used to put it out in different subject areas. Now, everything but the large economic development projects goes out at once. So the specific caps in the 2013 cycle are on the table that I think is attached to your memo. The overall maximum in 2013 was $2 million, and then the specific activity caps vary according to the activity. For instance, for the Small Business Revolving Loan Fund, it's $300,000 maximum. If you did micro-enterprise, which is very small businesses, you could also get $300,000 or $500,000 combined between the two. For housing, it was $600,000 max for housing rehabilitation or for home ownership assistance. If you did a combination, it was $1 million. For multifamily housing, it was $1 million. Public works, which they call public improvements, is half. Community facilities, also known as public facilities, was $1 million. Public services was $500,000. And then the planning grants, you could apply for up to two. Maximum $100,000. Now, we expect that the money moving between HUD and the state is going to be about half as much in 2014 as in 2013. So the information that we've gotten so far is to expect that the individual jurisdictional cap will be closer to $1 million than $2 million. So the activity caps are likely to also drop. We may not know to exactly what until December, and we expect the notice of funding availability to be out in January. So we're probably not going to get a lot of lead time on what the new caps are going to be. We'll just have to proceed with the best information that we have available. There are a couple of other changes that the state made in the program that affect the county's application. One was already mentioned, that there's a 50% rule. That is, for any open grants that the county has, have to have expended 51% before you apply for funds again. We're on track for that to be the case. Apply for up to three activities total within this. That includes the planning grants. That there is a set-aside of $100,000 for the planning grants. Last time we did this, you could either do planning grants or you could do a non-competitive set-aside activity, and that's what the Meals on Wheels program was funded under. There is no longer a non-competitive set-aside activity. The only thing you can do in that $100,000 is planning grants. Now, planning grants don't have to meet the same competitive criteria that the other activities do. They do have to principally benefit lower-income households, at least 51%. But otherwise, they don't have to be competitive the same way the other activities do. However, you have to have at least one competitive activity funded in order to get planning grants funded. So I see a couple of blank stares about that. I'm happy to answer any questions I can.
From where we're seeing, we see a lot more than a couple.
Does the planning grant, they're not guaranteed to be funded in the future, or are they? Are they tied to a future program that you're going to apply for then?
They aren't directly tied. They like to think that if you do a planning grant, there will be a block grant eligible application that comes out of it, but they are not strictly tied.
There's no guarantee.
No.
So to that end, we've recently been approached by JVID. I believe they needed some monies regarding planning and further expansion of their potable water system down there. And as we're about to hear from another applicant for a potential upcountry project, if we were to be awarded the one, then we have a likelihood of being awarded the planning grant, even though the two projects are separate?
Yes. As long as your planning grant meets the basic threshold criteria that it benefits the targeted income group at least 51%.
That area has already been studied.
If you get funded for your competitive activity, you'll get funded for the planning grant.
Automatically, yeah. As long as it meets the low-income criteria.
Yes.
Something to consider.
Other questions?
Yeah, I have a question. As far as doing, like, basically all, like, water-type project facility, it looks like that would fall into, what, like, public facilities activities that their project would fall, like building a new water tank or something along that line, replacing one.
On the table, they call it public improvements. Bottom left.
Oh, okay, I think it'd be more on top right, so that wouldn't be a public facilities then, huh? So you're talking public improvement?
Right.
Okay. Well, no, this would be like rebuilding one.
Yeah, anything like that.
Okay. And a question I have is River Pines, I know, has some water tanks that are pretty, at least one in particular, is really pretty dilapidated. I mean, basically about ready to fall in. And I was wondering, I think they're not quite, I don't know if they're in a position to go ahead with doing a grant, writing grants and stuff like that right now, or if you could do that for them. But I also know they're looking at projects like Amateur Water Agency. So can we do more than one?
Yeah, you can do more than one. However, the $1 million cap is going to be kind of an issue for public works projects.
Okay. $1 million or million and a half?
Well, last year it was $1.5 million, but we don't think it will be that high.
Okay, that's what you're talking about as far as all money's been reduced.
Exactly.
And that's a cumulative total of all your applications if you did a couple of?
Yeah.
Okay. Good, President Bailey.
Yes, so do you think in what we've talked about during our process, because Terry Cox and I and Gene Mancebo and Director Farrington have met numerous times, do you think that the project we're talking about, this public improvement activity, the $1 million should cover the cost, or do you think we'll be shortcomed of the funding?
Actually, I would probably defer that to the Amador Water Agency.
Okay. The other thing is, do you think that the CDBG grants for this year will be around $1 million, or do you think it could be less?
It'll be at least $1 million.
Okay.
It could be a little higher. The state prefers to have bigger grants because it's less work for them to do. But it depends on how much they're cut at the federal level.
All right. Any other questions? All right, we'll go ahead and open. This time we'll open the public hearing and take comments for consideration of new CDBG projects for the 2014 cycle. Rich? Thank you, sir.
My name is Rich Sherrington. I'm the District 3 Director for the Amador Water Agency. I'm representing the board and the formal action that they've taken on proposing this project that I'm going to talk about. President Molinelli had a last-minute conflict and was not able to be here, so I'm representing the board. I'm here to seek your support for federal CDBG funding for the Water Agency proposal and reference that July 11th letter that's attached to that handout, if you haven't. For your information, to improve the health and safety of over 250 homes in Pioneer. This proposal has been reviewed and recommended for board consideration by the County Administrative Committee. Pioneer Census Place data indicates that this area meets the 51% low and moderate income area benefit requirement of the CDBG program, according to the, you know, the 2010 data, where 42% are low income and over 53% are low and moderate income. The problem is that when any one of the seven fire hydrants that are opened along Highway 88 in Pioneer, the pressure drops and water is drained from up to 250 homes on Carson Drive and the surrounding area. This results in a health hazard and violation of California Drinking Water Regulation 64602, which requires maintaining a minimum pressure of 20 pounds per square inch. The problem was identified by Bartholomew years ago, 22 years ago, when he said, the system can't maintain 20 PSI during high flow periods and cannot meet the fire flow criteria in most areas. The worst areas include Carson Drive, which is in that area, Buckhorn Ridge Road and Sylvan Road. Firefighters have been told to avoid these hydrants along 88 unless there's an extreme need. This could increase the risk of homes being lost to fire, but if the hydrants are open, this creates a water health hazard to residents in the hills above Highway 88. It's not a good choice for the firefighters to make. The Water Agency is not eligible to apply directly for these funds, which is why we're turning to the county for help. The county has assisted the agency in the past, for example, by installing the emergency pumps and pipeline to the Buckhorn Treatment Plant from the river in 1977. The upcountry water system was formed by merging 10 small water districts, which the agency inherited. There are at least a half a dozen low-pressure, low-flow zones, what I call dead zones, in this system. The most serious one is probably in Pioneer because it affects both safe drinking water and the fire protection. Helping the agency to fix this problem will help keep costs down for low-income households. Some states like Georgia put almost 50% of their federal CDBG funds into water and sewer improvements. A grant for this project would reduce the risk of drinking water health hazard and improve fire protection. Now, I'd like to read a letter from a resident in Carson Drive area that explains the problem from her perspective. Rich, I will not be able to make it to the meeting on the 23rd, but I thought I'd send you this email to document the problems we've had related to water pressure and water safety at our house for over 20 years. When the fire department uses hydrants in the area to do drills or to put out fires, we stop getting water entirely. When the water comes back on, we get black residue and dirt in our water for hours. We do not ever get any heads up that our water is unsafe to drink, but just by looking at it, it is extremely unsafe. They've had to stop using the hydrants in the area for fire training to stop this problem. However, if there is a fire, we would have the problem all over again. And I'm going to skip down just to her summation. She says this is a huge health problem, health and safety problem, and thank you for addressing this concern. Thank you for your opportunity to comment.
So your fix for this, Rich, would be a rehab tank owned by the county, loop your line off of Carson Drive, and possibly like a pressure sustaining valve or something in the area?
I think I followed you with the loop and the tank.
Okay. I threw in the pressure sustaining valve.
Wow.
Once you have the tank.
That backflow preventers.
E-Man, SIBO, Amateur Water. I don't believe there would be a need for a pressure sustaining valve, but the concept is absolutely correct. Put in a storage tank, some new water line, create a loop up into the Carson Drive area so that we can sustain water pressures up there to have better flow, so that when a fire hydrant is opened up, these residents do not see the low pressure or zero pressure for some of them.
Do you have a location for the tank placement?
There are two potential locations that we've examined, and we'd refine that further. One is right off of Buckhorn Ridge Road near a tank we call C. The other location is off of Oxbow, and either location would work. It's a matter of how much pipe we would put in, if we have enough space on the site for the existing tanks that we were hoping, or at least one of the existing tanks we were hoping to utilize. So that needs some further examination before we find the location.
Have you verified that the 250 homes, the numbers, the 51% low and moderate, and of that, I guess, you talk about census data, but have you actually done a survey to verify those yet?
No, we've not done a medium household income survey of any sort to date, just... Director Farrington has reviewed the census data and is the medium household income based on that data. And I'm not sure which census that was.
Well, Pioneer Census Place, and that, well, we haven't gone to like a door-to-door survey. And I think if the county were thinking favorably about this project, I think that would give us kind of maybe a. I'd start pushing to do this, some of the statistics that we could verify.
We certainly could. Of those 250 residents, a fair portion of that resides in two mobile home parks.
I think your census should be pretty good numbers. I mean, can you just go with what the census has?
In this particular case, probably not, because the block groups for census data are going to be bigger than the area that will be served, and pretty much CDBG is required a door-to-door survey to document your benefit.
Okay.
Another question. Your water lines are correctly sized for this, or will you have to do some replacing of the water mains?
We will have to replace some of the water lines, not in the Carson Drive area in particular, but getting from the Buckhorn Ridge Road area out to Carson. And we're actually looking at a loop going through the Schaefer Ranch area. The existing pipe that goes out Schaefer Ranch Road is undersized, so we would have to replace that portion and then continue out to make the loop.
Gene, all of our new pipes that we would put in would be of size or greater, correct?
Correct.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but both place A and place B for the tanks, that would be gravity fed water to the hydrants and to the new drinking system, correct?
That is also correct.
Yeah, I was just going off memory on the size of the water mains, but some of them are like 4-inch in some places.
3-inch. The one I think in Schaefer is 3-inch.
Yeah.
That's correct. And the pipe coming up Carson Drive is actually a 6, but going out Schaefer Road is actually 3, and that's why it would have to be replaced.
Harry, who does that door-to-door survey?
Director Farrington.
It has to be a third party, so they can't do their own survey. But in the past, sometimes ACT has done it. Sometimes I've overseen it. It can vary.
Questions are put together and approved by the people.
It's a standardized format that CDBG uses.
Terry, while you're at the podium, the county's not going to incur any costs as we go forward with this, correct?
That's between you and the water agency.
Well, I think the water agency has agreed with us when we talked about this during the admin committee and the prior meetings.
I saw Rich looking at Gene and Gene looking at Rich. So.
That's correct. I mean, at this point, we've assumed that the agency would bear the cost for putting together any of the grant application information and going through the entire process.
Okay.
Gene, given the fact the problem you're addressing is one of potable water, there's going to these residences when you open a fire hydrant, it drains down. We had a discussion the other day on a different topic, but we touched on these tanks that the county has, and you made mention that it's just as costly to take those old tanks and rehab them and buy new gaskets and seal them and everything as purchasing a new tank. So it seems to me that these tanks are good, well suited in their current condition for non-potable water, but this sounds like a potable water incident. So is there a benefit from using these tanks for this scenario, if it's going to cost just as much to rehab them as it is to buy new ones?
You know, it comes down to trying to put them to good use. I assume if there was another applicable usage for those tanks that was non-potable, it certainly could be considered, and then we could look at purchasing a new tank for this particular application. But with the concept of trying to put those tanks to good use, this certainly is one area that we could, if it turns out to be a push, we could go either way. It just would be nice to put those tanks that have been sitting around to some type of a useful purpose.
Are there any areas within AWA systems where the fire hydrants are served with non-potable water and additional storage would be of benefit?
Currently, the only non-potable sources of water we have for fire protection come directly off of gravity pipeline, the amateur transmission pipeline. We really don't have much in the way where we serve non-potable water except the canal system, and there's really limited opportunity for fire protection there.
The new GSL will take care of a couple of hydrants, hopefully.
Correct, and that would have a very large source storage behind it on the gravity supply line. We would be looking at five fire hydrants off the gravity supply line,
But no need for storage on
but
that.
I don't see an application for the storage tank.
Right.
You know, one question I have, Mr. Mancebo, is I reuse stuff all the time. So it's not that I'm against reusing stuff. I mean, I'm like the world's biggest scrounge, I guess. But those tanks, if you're saying to rehab those tanks would cost, sound like the same amount of money as buying a new tank, unless those old tanks are thicker gauge or had some reason why they're better, why, I don't know if you'd want to do that.
My point, too.
I think that at the onset, the idea was to try to put them to use. However, I think on further examination, if for some reason it doesn't save money or if it doesn't make sense, we would try to go ahead and just use a huge storage tank. I mean, that would be my opinion of what we would try to do. You know, at this point, it was so close to a break-even, we decided not to evaluate it any further. But upon further evaluation of the storage tanks, you know, there may be a little bit more of an advantage. That's just something that needs more research before we actually determine if there's a savings or if it's an absolute push or if it actually may be more costly to use the old tanks.
The county could sell you both those tanks for $1 apiece, and if you found it made more sense to sell them for scrap metal, then you could use that money to go into the project.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. I'm here now. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Well, yeah. Maybe down the road we might have another use for those. I'm thinking of one project in particular, but kind of lost my train of thought when all this happened. But
you were going to say it's probably not a good idea to use.
Oh, I know what it was. Are we sure? Even I've been there a number of years. Are we sure everything's there for them?
No, most of it's missing, from what I understand. Bolts, flanges, and gaskets, and that.
That's a good question you brought up, Supervisor Boitano, because when you and I went looked at them, and from what Mr. Hopkins is showing me on paper in regards to the crates, and according to the manifest, each tank should be approximately 420,000 gallons, and it shows 10 crates. Two crates are used for painting materials, so at least 8 crates. And the crates you and I look like, that you and I observed, did not show, it looked like it consists of enough metal in there to make one 420,000 gallon tank, but that's for us to see.
Yeah,
because that 420,000 gallon tank was going if you do a few of the math work, it's going to take more than 10 crates of about 10 by 10 to build a 420,000 gallon water tank. We built one for 59,000 gallons, and it filled a whole 27 foot trailer semi tractor just up to about 10 feet, just the parts for a 59,000 gallon tank.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, we've had these tanks for a long time, and I think it was two of them, but did we give one to Drytown? You did there? No? They used a new one? Okay, I couldn't remember.
The success of the project does not hinge on the use of these used tanks, so I think we could leave that as a variable. We can continue to evaluate that. If it turns out that it does not favorable to use these excess tanks, well, then we would either go directly to a used tank, I mean to a new tank instead.
Gene, have you looked at what quantity of water would make for a successful improvement project here, and does the purchase price of a tank for that quantity of water and installation of all your piping fit within this approximate $1 million worth of grant, or does it fall short? Or
I mean, at this level of evaluation, it looks like it does fit inside. We have some ability, I think, to also to size this project a little bit as necessary. So we have some flexibility that we can work with in design. But I think funding-wise, it does fit. As far as the tank size, the tanks could be slightly smaller if we were to go to the site location that's closer to the Carson Drive area. But I think being close to 500,000 gallons is more a favorable size if we place it off of Oxbow.
We're getting more into the planning and design of this, and I think Gene was right, and we probably should leave that up to the water agency. But right now, we should talk to the project itself and whether we support it or don't support it for a CDBG grant.
Well, my question was based on if it's limited at $1 million now, and that's going to be woefully short of doing it, then why consider it?
And so they'll have to scale that depending on their projections.
I think everything we heard in all these meetings that this would be a good project for the CDBG grant. The meetings we've had with Terry Cox and the Water Agency, it shows a good project. And this is just one area, as we all are familiar with, areas where you do open up a hydrant and you don't have either the right water flow or the right piping for the water or et cetera, et cetera, in throughout the county. So I think this would be a good start. And I realize there are other areas in the county. I know there's one off of Silver Drive up in my area that has the same problems that we're talking about here. So I just think it's a good start for us to apply for a CDBG grant, and hopefully it'll go forward.
Other questions?
Yeah. I might have a question for me for Ms. Cox when she comes back.
Okay. Could you phase this project, like do the tank, and then do your tie-ins, and go back later and do the piping? You're upsizing. I don't know about your loop line.
I don't think CDBG would allow phasing, would it?
Because obviously $1 million isn't enough.
it depends on whether you can have a functional project at the end. because part of the competitive criteria on this is that you have some sort of enforcement action from whatever state agency is involved. And if you have, you know, some kind of issue from the state and the project you propose doesn't resolve it, then so you got to be able to do enough that addresses the problem.
All right. Back to my question, if you have phased it, could it work?
Supervisor Nettle?
I guess my question would be kind of looking at the what grants are available, Ms. Cox, and I think I'd like to see River Pines at some point put in the mix, but I mean, depending on how many projects are available, because I think right now they have a project they need. I don't think they're quite in a position right now to pursue a grant or carry it through. So I wouldn't want to put them in direct competition with the grant for AWA. But like, you know, what's available right now? Is it just, is there one project, basically the funding you're saying is roughly $1 million is what might be available?
That's what we expect, yeah.
Okay, so probably that'd be enough for one project, not two.
Right.
On the CDBG grants, are they rated as far as which has a better likelihood of being funded? How's that?
It is competitive, yes. And part of the criteria is the state enforcement action that I mentioned before. Part of it is that it primarily benefits lower-income people, that you have the various parts in place in order to have a project that's ready to go, that is site control, that the environmental review is either done or close to done and there are no big issues. If there's some sort of right-of-way that might be at issue, those kinds of things, they want a project that, you know, if they give you the money, that you can be in construction the following season. So they would look at all of those things. And for the River Pine project, and this would probably apply to some other projects in the other districts, if you have ones that you know need to be done, but they're not quite ready yet, these projects can take 2 years, sometimes more than that, to develop to the point where they're going to be competitive packages. So we can begin working with them.
Does you even have engineering done or something? Or like?
Right, because you have to have enough engineering done to justify your cost estimate. And if you're going to get the environmental done, it has to be developed to a certain degree to do that. So there is lead time on those pieces, plus working with the state agency that's going to have to supply this letter to document your need. Sometimes that takes a while also. So, you know, we can begin working with the future ones now.
Yeah, I think that might be a good idea. The only problem is they're a little bit in flux right now. I think they're basically their manager has moved on to another job, and they have a temporary person. They're kind of doing what she can do. You know, it's kind of it's a bit past her job classification, but she appears to be trying to do well. But so they might be a future applicant maybe.
Barry, just one question on these various categories. I noticed this Colonia activities, and those talk about potable water supply.
Yeah, they're down on the Mexican border.
Oh.
Sorry. That's why I didn't mention those.
Okay. Didn't know which one you'd want to try to apply. If one's real competitive and the other one's not, applying the one that's not as competitive. But
only question I'd have is the Colonia. Is that not this side of the border or the other side of the border?
Our side.
Oh. Never know this day and age the way we operate.
So back to my original question, Gene, have you had a chance to think about that? Or you want me to restate it?
The phasing issue is there's a potential that we could look at trying to phase this in such a way that we can avoid the violation with the state that may be just marginal. But might be able to do that, and so we'll take a look at that as we study it. Know for sure what the funding looks like to try to put it in a two-stage.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't we take additional comments? Thank you. Are there any additional comments on this program or any other new program for consideration? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Greg Faust, Pioneer, California, Buckhorn Ridge Road. And I'm just here to testify to what these guys are saying. On June 12th, our water stopped flowing. As a good citizen as I, because my wife was had her drip system going, she's trying to water the garden. We got no water. So, yeah, so I called the water agency and say, hey, just let you know, we have no water. And she said, you're the second phone call I just got. Hold on. I said, okay. So she comes back, she goes, okay, this is what's going on. The county's working at Pioneer Park, and they opened a hydrant to use water on their project. So I said, so that drained my water? She goes, yes. So then someone mentioned later about the health aspect, you know, did you just run your water for a while and stuff like that? Because it took a while before it really came back. And then my other concern was, you know, we have a fire hydrant right at the entrance of our property. We've been here 17 years. I've never seen it tested or opened. Now I know why. Now I know why. To me, it seems like the hydrant should be on some kind of separate system for fire, you know, and that's what I'm thinking as a homeowner insurance, there's a fire. Well, you know, they're going to come out and say, well, how come your hydrant didn't work? Or, I mean, there's big issues here. And I know, you know, the GSL, you know, hey, we need that for fire suppression. But the picture is even bigger than that with the hydrants and stuff. So whatever these guys want to do and try to improve that, I just encourage that. Because you know what we're dealing with up there, how dry it is and how overgrown everything is. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. Thank you.
No, I think what you say is very true. And I know talking with Supervisor Novelli, he's been very concerned about water flows and fire in his district for quite some time. So I'm glad to see that maybe AWA and Supervisor Novelli are taking some action to try to help with that.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? Other comments?
I have one.
Good afternoon. Could you pull the mic right over, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. It's my size. I'm Linda Stroh, and I live in Sierra Highlands Homeowners Association. I've lived in Pioneer for 10 years. I'm a customer of AWA. We bought a new home in Sierra Highlands off of Tiger Creek. I did not really realize the threat of fire was so prevalent in Pioneer, especially living so close to the BLM land. I've experienced several fires in my area, in the immediate area of my home, and they always bring back to me my present encounter of a house fire in my sophomore year of high school, where I was burnt over 33% of my body, second and third degree burns, and my mother did not recognize me after the third day of ICU. I might say, though, that it does clear up teenage acne.
Oh.
That fire experience has left a very physical, mental, and emotional scar on my life, and that's why I'm here to talk to you today about this issue. Living at the end of a supply water line, AWA, whenever the water line was worked on by AWA, or fire hydrants, or drawing of water by fire personnel for firefighting, we would lose all our water to the house. Our home is located about 200 foot above the street and the water line. Our home would drain itself of all water except the water in the water heater. 8 years ago, one of the fires happened in the middle of the night off of Tiger Creek. And our dog woke us up around 2 a.m. because some activity was happening at the fire hydrant that was between our home and the neighbor's home. A small fire department tanker was hooking up to this fire hydrant. between our home and the neighbors. And my husband and our son went out to investigate. And I stayed in bed, just let them deal with it. But all of a sudden, inside the house, a thunderous roar, like a train coming through the middle of our home, sound, and it was extremely scary, and I ran out to see what was happening. The tanker had drained all the water from our two-year-old home, and we got no water till the next morning because, of course, it has to refill all the water he has expounded in a matter of minutes. And then we realized that we really had a lot of problems. We received lots of small stones, sand, and welding slag, I think that's what my husband called it, in the home water line. All our toilets had problems. The valves inside the toilet tanks had to be taken apart to clean. My husband had to call the manufacturers to find out how to take them apart. The stones and the slag from the valves had accumulated into the component of our commodes. These screens on all the faucets had to be removed to remove the stones and the slugs, and all the faucets in the house, including our washing machine, and all outside hose bibs had to be opened to release the airflow from the water line. At that time, we really didn't realize that our drinking water had been having a problem. I was born and raised in San Joaquin County. I never realized the water damage or the water problems that we have up here in Pioneer. I do know that water is vitally important for life, as my father has been a well driller for years. But we definitely were drinking unhealthy water. There's no doubt now, as this problem is relived backwards. 2 years ago, we did install a backflow valve on our side of the meter, and we have not had to have this problem since. Unfortunately, at the time of the fire that I'm telling you, I did call the fire department. I asked what had happened, what fire this was. I did call AWA. We did have some representatives come up and talk to us, but nobody had a cure for this. They did say it was our problem since it was on our land and so forth and so on. So that's why we eventually hired a gentleman to come and put the backflow on. Fear of not having water in the home or not having water when a fire truck is drawn from the current water line supplying definitely gives us unsafe water and water for fire. It's a very major concern to know that that fire hydrant is there for a purpose that is draining us and homes above us. There is a very high fire hazard upcountry as documented by Cal Fire. I'm aware of reports of increasing forest fires in Cal due to the dry weather patterns and increasing fuels. A fire in our development, Sierra Highlands, could easily get out of control and burn down many homes. My association immediately has 150 phones in the association. A reliable water system is really a must. Reliable water is not needed to keep a forest fire from burning into our development. Upcountry has a number of places of low water pressure and low flows and substandard fire hydrants. Our association has continually tried to get our fire hydrants checked out, water pressure, and AWA is working on it slowly. This proposal, though, from AWA would begin to fix one of the bigger problem areas. We must have a more reliable water system than what we currently have, one that fire hydrants are usable without causing a health hazard to residents. And I strongly urge you to support this proposal from AWA and to help upcountry citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, ma'am. Any other comments regarding this project or other projects? Curtis?
Good afternoon again.
Jim?
I live upcountry, as you all know. It's really sad because AWA has been in service for quite a while, and it's been a problem for years, over 20 years, because when it was first developed and put together, it was put together with old parts, whatever you could get to have emergency water system. It's been neglected all this time. And so I just urge you to please look at the health and safety conditions, not wait for the infraction by the state to give you a non-compliant thing. You've got people up there that could get seriously sick. We have a chance to be able to begin to repair all the districts if you start using some of this CBDG grant money to help all areas that are in this situation. So if there is a choice between fixing an old tank or getting a new tank, if it's about the same cost, I think it's about time that that water system upcountry has something new that could be plugged into the system. All they've had up there is old stuff, and it's breaking down and could cause a serious health hazard if we don't have the water flows, which I hope we're going to get when we get the GSL. I hope and pray we don't have a fire before that time comes, because we could lose a lot of our tax base for the county up there. So anyway, I'm just here to support that because it will benefit not just this one little area, but there's a lot of other areas that you can begin this process. And I need to talk to Terry later because I think there's some confusion between a housing project versus infrastructure in conjunction with that versus a true public works that stands on its own, that doesn't build new housing or rehab housing. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments? One up, ma'am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Gail Winsett, and I've been a long-term resident of Upcountry. In the area of which you're speaking, and I'm here to also support the Upcountry Safe Water Grant Project. Now, where I live is on Mace Drive, and originally, from what I understand, that little community was built for vacation homes only, not for permanent residents. Well, that's been quite a while now. And over the years, more and more people have influxuated from out country areas. And I would say as of right now, 3/4% of the homes are occupied by permanent residencies. The rest are vacation homes. So, and when this project was first started, some of the supply lines were only like an inch and a half. They're old. Mr. Farrington was graciously came up because I was concerned about how old all the tanks were. We used to have two wooden tanks, and then they put in a large metal tank. It's not being taken care of. There's a lot of foliage up there. I'm very concerned about the water supply as far as pressure goes. We have a point taken right now is that we have a brand new neighbor across the street who is literally spending $1,500 for a nice updated sprinkler system in his yard. Can't get it to work, only portions of it. So some of us do have low water pressure. So I'm, like I said, I'm here to see if we can't get this grant going, get updated, because our community is growing. And not all of us are in low income. Our housing values have plummeted, but I do see an improvement now. 4 years ago, there were six houses that went into foreclosure. Happily, I'm here to say that they've all now been occupied, and people are taking pride. And so, but they want to know what's available there for water and pressure, fire safety. So thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to listen.
Thank you, Gail.
Any other comments? Supervisor?
Close the public hearing.
Oh, you want to say something?
Yes, I just want to say for the record, I got a letter from Gary Durrell that was in support of the CDGB grant application going forward. Gary's been a resident of Upcountry for, I think, approximately 46 years, and he's very active, and he's a past contractor. So I won't read the letter into the record, but he wanted me to state it for the record.
No letter of support from the Upcountry Community Council, though, huh?
I don't think we have one. Sherry, do we? Ask Sherry Curtis. She's co-chair of that.
We do not have one yet, but what we're working on is some of the procedures that we need to learn to follow. And so we're going to change some things, hopefully, and you will have either a yay or nay coming up probably by September.
I thought I saw an email from someone on the Upcountry Community Council that said there was not support for the project.
I just saw
that
no,
is not
no
verifiable.
It was on no position.
Yeah, it's not verifiable. There was a lack of transparency on some things going on, and I would like to refrain from stating anything more, but we will be revisiting the situation that took place.
I find that people that represent the area on different councils up there, for them not to be taking a position of support on this is, to me, mind-boggling. When you hear the stories of people that have no water, that just for your normal living, but during periods of things like firefights and things like that, just ridiculous.
It is, especially when they don't come to the meetings and they want to send an opinion in. So most of those objections that I have yet to see them as vice chair, what they were and who it was, and I've asked to do that, and so hopefully in the future we will have it taken care of better.
Hope so. I agree with Supervisor Forster to see that position taken by that entity, frankly, in my mind, just continues to degrade the credibility of the entity itself.
I agree.
Any other recommendations they want to come forward with?
You know, I would agree with what both supervisors have said previously. I've seen some of the emails going back and forth, and I think it would behoove the UCC to get their house in order. If they're supposedly representing the upcountry people, I think it would be good if they, not throwing this at you, Sherry, but it would behoove them to start representing upcountry like they portray they are. Because what I've seen going on those emails was just baffling. I mean, I was not impressed.
I know when I served on the agency board and Supervisor Novelli, your charge is to provide water, and you're looking 50 years into the future. You're not looking at growth, but this issue is even separate from all that when you're looking
at health and safety.
Health and safety. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, but I couldn't agree with you more, and we've been working, and we will continue to work on changing what's not gone right.
I think it would be good because what I was seeing looked more like environmentalism through political avenues than it was serving the interests of the upcountry.
Well, I can tell you from what Lynn has said is that the people that sent in some concerns were not the ones that came to our meetings. So I don't know.
That's a problem. Anytime you have something by consensus, all it takes is one, and you don't have a consensus.
Yeah, except our bylaws state, and I fought hard for it because it's not the American way consensus group. It's coming in from other NGOs and type organizations, that there will be a
reconsideration. We'll put it on the agenda, and then there will be a vote taken. So I pushed hard, screamed and yelled, tried to get that as a checkmate, because you can't have one or two people stopping everything.
Absolutely.
And so anyway, that's what's going on.
Thank you. Thank
you. And if you need any more, call me. Bye.
I made a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. I think we're complete, right?
Almost. We have one last item. This is the housing rehabilitation guidelines. The board reviewed this back earlier this spring as part of your update to the program income reuse plan, March. Since then, the state said, well, actually, we want this noticed separately, and we want a separate resolution to go with it. So you have seen and approved these guidelines already. They are the state model guidelines. We're still supposed to have a public hearing for public comments regarding these.
You'll work with Jennifer to get that agendized.
Part of this.
It's here. There's a resolution, so we have to open up a public hearing for that part of it and then close it and then adopt the resolution. I've been sitting here for 21 years for nothing. No.
I'm looking for the resolution.
Right here, Richard. That's about 5 or 6 pages up from the back of the packet.
All right, just been taking action, board.
Do we need to open up the public hearing? Is it?
This have to go through the public hearing process, too? Okay. We'll open the public hearing process for the approval of the update of the county CDBG housing rehabilitation guidelines. Anyone like to speak on this?
Move to close the public hearing.
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Move to approve the attached resolution approving the updated housing rehabilitation guidelines.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Are we to, we did on our first item, though, we're supposed to direct staff to review the suggestions for CDBG projects for further consideration. Didn't hear any other project suggestions that had a likelihood of going forward at this time. So do we want to?
I think
do we have an opportunity to go after that other insert a planning grant application?
That's at the board's discretion, yeah.
We could do that after. That would be the second item.
Jackson Valley?
Yeah, just to sort of review that proposal from Jackson Valley on the expansion out to the Oaks and so forth. That, too, meets the low-income requirements, or at least has in the past. They have done an actual income survey out there and found it to be well within the...
What's the proposal from Jackson Valley?
The proposal we had before is regarding the loan out of the Water Development Fund, but they also said there was additional, to my recollection, there was additional planning and potentially engineering to
cost.
That's
to
all
expand tied, to the Oaks.
That's all tied into the second phase, I believe.
But if this covers those costs for them up front, then they're ready to move forward with more of a shovel-ready project.
We can run it by... Steve Frederick, but I believe those costs were all tied into the Prop 50 grant.
Okay.
Duck cash flow, I guess.
Remember those That's extra costs that we talked about?
His issue was just to be, they needed the money on a 30 to 60 day payback instead of a 90 day plus payback.
That was for the Water Development Fund monies for this next phase, right?
Right,
for the revolving line of credit from
planning,
the Water Development
Planning
Fund.
And construction.
There was
planning and construction, planning, there was construction, so that's one and two, and three was the operation and maintenance of the plant. John, I don't mind discussing that with Steve and see if he wants to explore this some more.
Someone's going to need to pay for the application we prepared. The study's got to be done as far as the income, and that has to be covered somewhere.
I think they do that through the grant itself.
No, if the grant's not, typically we would pay Terry, which is what AWA is going to do.
Why don't we run that by their director, their executive director, and see if he wants to apply for funding for that?
Yeah, so we could move forward with the AWA component and discuss it further with JVID's executive director to see if a $100,000 planning grant tagged onto this application would be helpful to their project.
But what if we need all the money, John? What if this first grant needs all the money?
Does the $100,000 planning come out of the million?
Yes.
Public
whatever the cap
improvement.
Is, it will
right.
be part of that, yeah.
Well, I think I want to go forward with the AWA first, and then if there's
Agreed.
Any money left over, I agree. But if there's no money left over, I think it should all go to the AWA grant first.
Agreed.
So,
I didn't realize that it came off
Correct.
Of a cap like that. I thought it was a second component.
Now, I told Supervisor Novelli a note here that I wouldn't have a problem with using some money out of the water supply fund as a grant to this. I think there's sufficient money in the fund without, we're sure not going to come close to draining it. Basically, you'd be using the interest off what's gained in that in a year to try and help some of these systems in the county. So you're not talking about a lot of money.
Yeah. No, I applaud everyone. It's good that we're going to get started because it's something that's sorely needed, and the sooner you start, the sooner you get there. But I don't know if there's enough money to fix everything up country.
I agree. I think this grant, and I concur with the comments made here by the supervisors and by Mr. Chairman Forrester, but I think we start this grant first, and then depending on how we go forward on these other projects, whether it be down in the Comanche area or other areas in the upcountry area, we could keep the Water Development Fund, Water Supply Fund, as a way of means of paying for some of this, and we can also apply for other CDBG grants down the road, like in, for example, as Supervisor O'Neill brought up in the River Pines area. But there are many, many, many tanks out there, as we can all attest to, that do need some type of a repair or some type of new roofing or some type of new structure, and this is the beginning, so I think we should go forward.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been, almost 27 years since I worked for the agency, and I used to started there by reading the meters on all the upcountry tanks, so I know what shape they were in those days, and then later on, you know, I worked on a lot of the infrastructure up there as far as their distribution system. Pretty bad shape. A lot of stuff was put in the late 50s, early 60s, and hasn't been touched since. And I guess the same could be said throughout the county, throughout the agency's system, really.
Terry, anything else?
Good for today.
At 3 o'clock, the board has more work to do in closed session, so that is all for today. And thank you for being here.
Thank you, Terry. Right. We did.
I don't remember doing that for some reason. I didn't remember doing that. Okay. Thank you.